Chapter 1. Let me in. Let me in. As I rode up to the grey stone house, my heart warmed towards the man in his 40s that I saw standing before me, his black eyes watching me suspiciously. I felt sure we would be friends. "Mr. Heathcliff?" I asked. The man nodded. "Mr. Lockwood, sir, your new tenant at Thrushcross Grange." Mr. Heathcliff nodded again, and through his teeth said, "Come in." His words sounded more like "go away" than an invitation to enter his farmhouse, which sat solid and low against the hillside. "Joseph, take Mr. Lockwood's horse," he said. The thin servant who appeared had an expression that would make vinegar taste sweet in comparison. "The Lord help us," he muttered, as he led my horse to the stable. Wuthering Heights is the name of Mr. Heathcliff's dark house, and it is well named, I am sure. Wuthering is a word they use here in the north of England to describe the sound of the wind as it roars across these high moors. Indeed, the few pine trees around the house were short and did not grow straight, but leant over as if to escape the wind. On this bright spring day, I almost heard the wind moaning through the house and into the hearts of its inhabitants. As I followed Mr. Heathcliff, I saw, carved in stone above the door, Hareton Earnshaw, and the year 1500. The front door went straight into a great room full of dark furniture, which looked as old as the house. I went to touch one of the dogs, but it snarled at me viciously. Mr. Heathcliff and I did not exchange many words, and after a few minutes I got up to go, promising him that I would come to see him the next day. His face did not show any enthusiasm for my next visit, but I was curious to get to know this man, so withdrawn from the world. The next day the weather was bad. I had decided to stay at home, but the servants had not lit the fires, and it was cold at Thrushcross Grange, so I walked the 4 miles up to Wuthering Heights. The first snow was falling as I arrived. I knocked and banged on the door, but there was no answer. Eventually, the sour face of Joseph appeared from a barn.
"Master's busy, and the missus won't let you in."
And with that, he disappeared. It began to snow heavily, and still no one opened the door. Then, through the snow, I saw a young farm worker. He did not speak, but took me to the back of the house, through the kitchen, and into the big room I had seen the day before. A fire burned in the huge fireplace, and a meal was set on the table. Sitting in a chair near the fire was a beautiful young woman. She did not move as I entered and did not speak, but stared at me with a coldness that matched the weather. "Mrs. Heathcliff?" I asked, but she did not answer. Trying to start a conversation, I said how pretty were the kittens I saw in a corner of the room. "Strange choice of pet," she said unpleasantly. When I looked more closely, I realized my mistake. They were not kittens, but a pile of dead rabbits that the dogs had caught. The girl did not speak again, and we sat in complete silence for many minutes, until Mr. Heathcliff and the young man who had shown me into the house came in. "I have kept my promise," I said to my landlord, relieved to break the silence. "You should not have come up here in such weather," was his answer. "Do you know that you could get lost out here? Even people who know these moors well cannot find their way on evenings like this."
"Perhaps one of your servants could guide me home," I said.
"There is no one to take you," he said. Then he turned to the young lady and demanded, "Are you going to make the tea?" "Is he to have any?"
she asked, looking at me.
Get it ready, will you?
He said this so aggressively that I was shocked. The way he spoke to the young lady was truly terrible. I no longer thought of Mr. Heathcliff as a friend. When the meal was ready, he invited me to join them, but no one spoke, and I was not hungry. Your wife keeps a good house, Mr. Heathcliff, I said.
My wife?
He said, with a look that seemed to come straight from the devil.
Where is she, then?
I realized my mistake. The young lady must be married to the young farm worker who sat eating in silence beside me.
Mrs. Heathcliff is my daughter-in-law, explained Heathcliff.
As he spoke, he looked at her with intense hatred.
Then you are the lucky man, I said to the young man. But he looked as though I had hit him, turning bright red and clenching his fists in anger.
Wrong again, said Heathcliff with a smile. Her husband is dead.
I said she was my daughter-in-law, he continued. Therefore she must have married my son.
So this young man is not my son. Heathcliff smiled again, as if the idea of Hareton being his son was a good joke.
My name is Hareton Earnshaw, growled the young man, and I will teach you to respect it.
I looked down quickly, not wanting to anger him further. We finished our meal and I got up to look out of the window. The snow was falling thicker than ever, covering everything.
It will be impossible for me to get home without a guide, I said.
But when I turned round, only Mrs. Heathcliff was left in the room, with the servant, Joseph, coming in with food for the dogs.
I don't know how you can stand there doing nothing, said Joseph,
his face pinched and mean, his Yorkshire accent so strong I could hardly understand him. He was speaking to the young lady.
You are useless, and you will never get any better. You will go to the devil like your mother before you.
You disgusting old hypocrite, she replied.
Aren't you afraid that the devil will come and take your soul? In fact, I might ask him to do it for me as a special favour. I have been learning my spells. You don't think that red cow died by herself, do you?
And she looked at him as if she really were a witch. Joseph was shocked.
Oh, you are wicked, wicked! May the Lord save us from your evil ways!
And with that, he put down the dog's food and left as quickly as he could. I thought that she was joking, but when I asked her to tell me the best way to get home in all this snow, she sat down in a chair with a candle and said rudely,
"Go back the way you came!"
and opened her book.
"I see you will not help me, and since there is no one to guide me, I will have to stay here for the night."
"You will have to ask him," she said.
I heard a movement from the kitchen.
"Let this be a lesson to you to go walking on the moors in such weather," said Heathcliff, coming into the room. "We do not have a room for guests. You will have to share with Hareton or Joseph."
The thought did not appeal to me.
"I will sleep here on a chair," I said.
"No, you won't. I will not have strangers wandering around the house while I sleep."
With this final insult, I took my coat and went out into the night, almost running into Hareton.
"I'll go with him as far as the road to the Grange," he said.
"You'll go with him to hell,"
roared Heathcliff.
"You still have the horses to look after."
And with that, he left.
"A man's life is more important than the horses for one night," said the young Mrs. Heathcliff with more kindness than I expected.
"You must go, Hareton."
"You will not command me," snarled the young man.
"Then I hope his ghost will haunt you,"
And Mr. Heathcliff never finds another tenant until the Grange is a ruin, she answered sharply.
Joseph, hearing all the noise, came up with a lantern in his hand. Seeing my chance to escape, I snatched it from him and set off.
Hey, master! He's stealing the lantern!
Shouted the ancient servant, calling the dogs. At that moment, two hairy monsters ran out, jumping up at my throat and knocking me over. The lantern went out, but the dogs did not tear me to pieces as I expected. They started to lick me. I heard a guffaw from both Heathcliff and Hareton. My nose had started bleeding badly, and still Heathcliff laughed without coming over to help me. Fortunately, at that moment, the housekeeper came running out of the house.
Are we murdering people on our doorstep now? She said to Hareton.
Then, seeing how my nose bled, she said,
I know a way to cure that,
and tipped a bucket of icy water down my neck. At that point, Heathcliff stopped laughing, his face returning to its normal darkness, and he went off down the farmyard, while the woman, who told me her name was Zilla, led me shaking back into the house. In the kitchen, she gave me a glass of brandy and told me how sorry she was for all that had happened. Then she handed me a candle and told me to follow her upstairs without making a sound.
The master does not like anyone to use this room, she said.
But when I asked why, she said she had only been here a year or two. She did not know, and it was not a good idea to ask questions in this house. I said goodnight to her and got into the bed, which was against a window. I put my candle on the window ledge and saw that some words had been scratched into the wood. I looked more closely and read a name, repeated again and again in letters large and small. Catherine Earnshaw. Then occasionally, Catherine Heathcliff and Catherine Linton. I read the names over and over until the letters were swimming in front of my eyes and the Catherines were flying around my head like ghosts. On the ledge were some old books. I opened one. Inside it was written, Catherine Earnshaw, her book. In each of the books were written the same words. And what's more, someone had covered the margins of the books with small, neat writing. I moved the candle closer and began to read the faded words. An awful Sunday, the words began. I wish my father were back. My brother Hindley is detestable. He is awful to Heathcliff. H and I are going to rebel. It was raining all day and we could not go to church. So H and I were sent upstairs to read our Bibles with Joseph, while Hindley and Francis sat in front of the fire. Joseph kept us there for 3 hours, and when we came down, Hindley said, What? Finished already? When Father was alive, we were allowed to play on Sundays. Now if we make even the smallest sound, we are punished.
You forget who is the master here, says the tyrant Hindley. Don't you dare put me in a bad mood. Francis, pull that boy's hair. I think he made a noise.
She pulled it, then went to sit on her husband's knee, and they kissed and talked nonsense like two babies. We played quietly, but then Joseph came in.
How can you play when the old master died only the other week? Read these Christian books and think about how to save your souls from the devil.
He gave us each a book, but I stood up and threw mine across the room, and H kicked his across the floor. Hindley came over and pushed us into the kitchen, while Joseph told us the devil would come and take our souls.
We are going to run away.
I imagine that Catherine and Heathcliff must have tried to run away, because the next section Catherine wrote said,
I cannot believe how much Hindley has made me cry.
My head aches with it. He has said that H is a vagabond and is not to sit or eat with us any more. He blames our father for being too kind to H. How could he say such a thing? As I read, my eyes began to feel heavy. I fell asleep and had a terrible nightmare. In it, I was trying to walk home in the snow, and Joseph was talking and talking, telling me to save my soul, repeatedly hitting a Bible with his hand. When I woke, I saw it was still snowing. There was a pine tree outside the window, and there was a strong wind. The noise in my dream must have been a branch hitting the window, I decided, and went back to sleep. I woke a second time. It was still night, and the branch was still knocking at the window. I opened the window to break the branch off, but when I reached my arm out, my fingers closed on the fingers of an ice-cold hand. I tried desperately to free my hand, but whatever held me was too strong. Then I heard a sad little voice.
"Let me in. Let me in," it said.
"Who are you?" I asked, still trying to free myself.
"Catherine Linton," the voice replied, shivering with cold. "I am come home. I'd lost my way on the moors."
As it spoke, I thought I saw a child's face through the window. I was terrified.
"Let me in,"
the child cried again.
"It's been 20 years. I've been waiting 20 years.
I freed my hand and, shouting in fright, shut the window, piling the books in front of it. All the time the creature wailed, and the pile of books began to move in towards me. I should not have shouted out in that way, because I soon heard footsteps coming towards my door. I lay back in my bed without making a sound.
"Is anyone there?"
a man whispered. It was Heathcliff. He stood in the door, holding a candle which was dripping down over his hand, his face as white as the wall behind him. I decided to tell him it was me and sat up in my bed. The effect on him was like an electric shock. The candle flew from his hand, and he was shaking so much he could hardly pick it up again. "This place is full of ghosts," I said.
"What do you mean?" he said. "Go back to sleep, and for God's sake do not shout like that again unless you are being murdered."
"Well," I answered, "if that little monster, Catherine Linton, had got in, she probably would have killed me."
"What can you mean by talking to me in this way?" he thundered. "How dare you?"
"I cannot sleep here, sir." Heathcliff took a minute to calm himself, then came into the room.
"Then you must finish the night in my room."
I got up to leave, but as I went through the door, I heard Heathcliff burst into uncontrollable tears. He pushed the books out of the way and opened the window.
"Come in. Come in," he sobbed. "Oh, do come again, my heart's darling. Catherine, hear me this time."
This ghost was cruel, as they often are, and she did not come back. I felt guilty that I had witnessed the distress of this troubled man and left silently. Long after I had walked down to the kitchen to warm myself by the fire, I could hear him quietly calling and sobbing into the empty darkness of the night.